Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We're going to visit with one of our leading lights here at Securing America about a variety of threats to the country we love, both foreign and domestic in character. That would be Charles Sam Faddis, a career undercover operative for the Central Intelligence Agency, among many other things. These days, a very prolific contributor to, well, the public policy debate through a platform called And Magazine, available at Substack. Sam is a member of our Committee on the Present Danger, China, and a very valued contributor to this program. It's good to have you back, sir. Welcome once again.
Always great to be here, Frank. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me start by asking you about another undercover operation, I guess one might call it, mounted by the Chinese Communist Party. They profess that it's nothing more than a service center to help their nationals get, you know, various documents improved and so on. Two people have been busted by the Department of Justice in what it calls a, quote, flagrant violation of our nation's sovereignty, unquote. What do you make of it?
Well, you know, you got to love the CCP on some level, right? Because I don't know if Yiddish is appropriate in talking about them, but they've got chutzpah, right? You could be caught red-handed doing the most amazing thing and just with a straight face say it's nothing. I mean,
a balloon that's off course, for example.
They've been operating this, what we call police station. I don't know that it's really a police station for God knows how long. Finally, I guess it's been shut down. I get a whole bunch of questions. I mean, it's not news that it's been there, so I don't know why we had to wait forever to shut it down.
Well, we've been on notice for at least 6 months from this Spanish think tank that talked about it, telling us it was there.
The other piece of this, of course, is that, again, you're using this terminology, police station is, I don't know. I mean, let's just go with it. But the point is, what the Chinese do with these, with this kind of presence, is they hunt down dissidents. They take action against them. In some cases, it looks like action on our soil. But more generally, they force them to go home, where they basically disappear. They track you down and find you and tell you and show you pictures of grandma and your parents.
Or even have her on a video screen being interrogated, right?
100%. Drag you in, put you on video with your relatives back in China, make it crystal clear that these guys are losing their home, you know, being dragged away and vanishing. So, okay, good. I guess we got rid of two guys, but bigger picture here is, why have we been ignoring this? And are we actually stopping that? Just because we shut down this one storefront doesn't really tell me anything about whether we're doing anything meaningful, I guess, as usual.
Yeah. Well, they've got 40 others that apparently they're investigating or prosecuting for other pressure campaigns. And some, it seems, are simply trying to recruit Chinese nationals, you know, to serve the motherland. And that's a problem as well. But Sam, you know, I did my commentary on this today. We'll talk a little bit more about it with Bobby Charles later in the program, but I'd like to get your thoughts on this. If this administration is suddenly seized with what it calls flagrant violations of our national sovereignty, I have a hard time squaring that with what it seems determined to do to crush our national sovereignty by giving, in the first place, maybe the World Health Organization or the United Nations or maybe both, authorities to declare things about our country, public health emergencies in the case of the WHO, crises in the case of the UN, and tell us what we have to do about it. That would seem to be a rather serious, both violation and brutal disregard for and possibly the termination of national sovereignty, no?
Yeah, I don't think that's an overstatement. You know, we live in this crazy time in which there are these things going on that not so long ago would have been the plot of a bad dystopian novel, but they're not conspiracy theories. This kind of stuff is really actually happening. I mean, we just went through this so-called pandemic where we adopted Chinese Communist Party measures, lockdowns, without, by the way, bothering ever to talk to the Congress and the elected representatives of the people. Just suddenly executives all over the country decided they were now the CCP in the United States. And now we haven't turned away from that. We seem to be gathering speed, right? The WHO is going to decide when there's an emergency. The United Nations is going to declare things. And somehow or another, the entire structure of the Constitutional Republic of the United States is cut out of the picture. We've that whole pesky document, the Constitution, we apparently don't pay any attention to that anymore. We now have a bunch of unelected international bureaucrats and Marxists who are going to make decisions for the American people. And that's serious. I mean, they're actually serious about doing this.
Serious. And this is hurtling down the pike towards us. And thus far, we've seen very little in the way of resistance. I mentioned later in the program again, but our sovereignty coalition has been stood up basically for the purposes of trying to make sure that at least everybody is on notice this is afoot. And more to the point, see if we can't stop it. Especially this idea that they can tell us what to do about various problems. I appreciate your clarity on this point, as always, Sam. Let me ask you about another topic that you've addressed. I'm going to have time to put the question to you, but I'm going to have to ask you to address it probably in fulsome detail to some extent on the other side of a break. But Ukraine. We talked the last time you were with us about some of the revelations that things are not going particularly well there, apparently. You've written at Substack, Sam, that there are really serious questions about where the money, where the arms that we have been providing have gone, and that we need an accounting of that before we put still more of either, let alone both, in. Walk us through that quickly.
Well, the latest revelation is that at least $400 million of money that we've sent to Ukraine has just vanished, been embezzled. I've said this every time I'm on air on the topic of Ukraine. I'm no friend of Vladimir Putin's, nor do I justify his aggression and what he's gotten his head handed to him on the battlefield, and he deserved it. Doesn't mean just shoveling money downrange to one of the most corrupt nations on earth is a good idea. I mean, the only country in Europe considered more corrupt than Ukraine is actually Russia. It's not a reflection on Ukrainian people or their cause, but they've got some leaders who are prone to just sort of take this money and put it, you know, steal the money from the cookie jar kind of thing. And let's not pretend otherwise. We just spent 20 years doing this in Afghanistan and watching a lot of money just be siphoned off by crooks. And unfortunately, I'm afraid that's what we're doing again.
Sam, if we stop doing what we're doing, are you particularly concerned that, especially given what we've learned in this trove of intelligence documents, Ukraine will lose? And will that have negative repercussions for us as well?
Well, I don't think we can just stop supporting the Ukrainians. That's not what I'm recommending. And would they lose without our support? Without question. Do we want that? We don't. But we could support the Ukrainians and not endorse the full course of action we're currently pursuing, particularly just throwing money at the problem and not worrying about where it goes.
As I thought, we're going to need to continue this conversation on the other side of a short break. We'll be right back with Sam Faddis right after this. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. You may have noticed that something has been terribly wrong with America's public health system. One reason is that it's been heating World Health Organization bureaucrats doing the bidding of the Chinese Communist Party. They concealed the fact that the CCP deliberately unleashed a biological warfare attack against this country and the rest of the world. The WHO not only lied about the origins and nature of the Wuhan virus, it also insisted on the so-called China model response of masks, lockdowns, mandatory jabs with inadequately tested so-called vaccines, and digital passports to enforce them. Investigators of Pfizer documents found the company and regulators had evidence they were perpetrating a, quote, great crime against humanity, unquote. We need accountability and protection against the World Health Organization, the Chinese Communists, Big Pharma, and our own government doing even worse to us in the future. This is Frank Affney. Welcome back. We're talking about Ukraine with Sam Faddis, one of our duty experts on all manner of things, the author of, among other things, The Decline and Fall of the CIA. The title of the book is Beyond Repair. Sam, some would say our policy towards Ukraine is beyond repair. You were beginning to lay out kind of what you would recommend we do under these circumstances. And obviously a piece of this is figure out what's happened to what we've already sent there. Finish your thought, if you would, on this.
Well, look, there was an inspector general, a special inspector general for the Afghan Reconstruction, acronym SIGAR, that has written just splendid reports for many years on how much of our money went awry in Afghanistan. They have addressed the issue of Ukraine and what we're doing head on, basically from that standpoint. And they said, look, we get it. In a crisis, there's this temptation to just shovel money and arms downrange. Don't do it. It can really backfire on you. One of the things that really strikes me is I spent a lot of years, as a number of other agencies officers did, running around the planet trying to buy back from Islamic extremist Stinger anti-aircraft missiles that we had shoveled into Afghanistan to use against the Russians. A lot of them got used to great effect. But a bunch of them ended up in the black market, and now we're running around trying to buy them back at a premium price, by the way, from Al-Qaeda. And we did that for years. Now, the Ukraine aid actually dwarfs all of that tremendously. So we're not just talking about money. We're talking about potentially where are all the weapons actually going to end up? So, you know, what am I advocating? How about we just institute some good management practices here. Let's slow down a little bit. Let's account for it. Let's put some people on the ground that say, we sent you the X number of dollars for this. Show us the proof you spent it on what we gave it to you for. I also, as I always say, think, look, at some point you have to recognize we have to direct this conflict toward negotiation and end this war. I don't think that's simple. I don't think it's going to happen in 5 minutes. But you can't just keep pouring fuel on this fire. That's not a plan.
Yeah. And Sam, I guess there's a lot of speculation about whether efforts by the Ukrainians to prevail in the war are going to be unavailing. There's talk of this coming spring offensive. A lot of those arms and a lot of people are likely to be thrown into the maw of the Russian, you know, artillery intensive meat grinder. What are your thoughts about that? And does a negotiated arrangement have to be put into place to prevent that kind of bloodletting?
Well, I think one of the things we need to understand here is that obviously Vladimir Putin's concept of a blitzkrieg where he was going to take Kiev in a few days, okay, that was exposed. The Red Army that took Berlin doesn't exist anymore. Okay, got it. This thing could, as you just said, continue as a meat grinder for a very long time now, where it just consumes resources, destroys cities, and always with the danger that it's really going to escalate out of control. So I don't expect the Ukrainians are going to be real eager to negotiate a solution that involves giving up 1 inch of their territory. I wouldn't be eager either. And Vlad is going to cling to his delusions he can somehow win. But at some point, we got to negotiate our way to an end to the conflict. We just can't this fantasy that we're just going to keep pouring billions of dollars in here and Vladimir Putin's going to disappear and the world, you know, springtime will break out. It's just that. It's a fantasy. You got to bring it to a conclusion.
Well, this is a subject to which we will return with you, I know, in the days to come. How you do that, how it turns out to be anything other than a victory for Putin, remains to be seen. Sam, I did want to ask you about one other thing, though. You've written a very powerful piece at N Magazine, Substack, about the Biden administration's policies towards illegal immigration, which essentially are, y'all come, as best I can tell. There's a piece of this, though, that you've developed that talks about its impact on many, many millions of Americans in a way that we haven't seen to this point. It's something they're calling the Welcome Corps. Talk a little bit about that and how that might work.
Yeah, I have trouble talking about this with a straight face because it actually sounds like the plot of a Saturday Night Live episode. What are we going to do with all the immigrants? Well, you get to adopt them now is effectively what the federal government is saying. The State Department has announced this welcome program, and you get to sponsor illegals and take them into your home and find them employment and feed them and house them. That's Joe Biden's plan. You're supposed to literally, as if these are pets from the shelter, adopt these people. I mean, it's insane. Everything about the policy is insane, right? Our good friend Michael Yon is down currently in Panama doing spectacular reporting, once again laying out how our Homeland Secretary was just there, choppered in, choppered out to Panama, not to try to stop the flow, but to double the size of the camps that we're funding via the United Nations. So our Homeland Security Secretary just went to Panama because his focus is we need to double our capacity to move people north. I mean, we're literally funding the camps. These people are moving in tour buses. The Red Cross, I almost couldn't believe this until I saw the actual pictures and talked to Jan about it. The Red Cross gives you these full color, big fold out maps that show the locations of all the camps and the routes and give you instructions on how to come north and get into the United States illegally, all being printed again with US taxpayer money. So anybody who still thinks that our policy is to stop people from coming in the country does, it's 180 degrees out from that. Our policy is now the official policy is described as orderly migration. That's the terminology this administration uses. We spend our money and our resources to bring these people here. It's not just we're trying to stop them and we're failing.
And as you know so well, Sam, the practical effect of all of that is to incentivize still more people to think that they can come and doubtless will try. And to the extent that we are actually now putting more resources behind facilitating that, how can it do other than become an even more metastasized problem? And I'm reminded back in the Obama administration, there was a time when they were bringing relatively small numbers of refugees in, and they created some sort of Welcoming America or such program. And they went a step further, and they warned about what they called pockets of resistance across the country that would think this is a bad idea. I've got to believe that there are going to be more than pockets of resistance to all of this as it becomes more and more palpable in people's communities, as you say, in their spare bedrooms, perhaps. And at some point that creates, you know, a potential for fratricide in our country, does it not?
Yeah, it's going to tear the country apart. And let's just, you know, keep in mind, this is not just Central Americans. There's at least people from all over the planet. According to Michael Yana, over 140 nations that he's documented, including vast numbers of Chinese. So everybody on the planet is coming. And by the way, we don't know who all of them are, and we're making no effort to control that. So along with Ma and Pa from Guatemala City, could be terrorists, could be anything on earth. And we've just abandoned any attempt to control that. So, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket science to figure out that ends really
bad. It does not end well. Exactly right. Sam Faddis, this ends at this point. Thank you for your time and your great work, your service to our country over so many years. I know you'll keep it up. And thank you for being a member of our Committee on the Present Danger of China, among other things. Stay tuned for more right after this.
Night in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're back, and I couldn't be more pleased to say a dear friend, a valued colleague, an inspiring leader in the fight for freedom is with us virtually. Her name is Dr. Karen Sigmund. She is the president of a terrific organization based in Los Angeles called the American Freedom Alliance. You have seen her frequently on Steve Bannon's show War Room, and less frequently, I'm sorry to say, here, but we prize both her visits and those visits that we get to make to her place out in the Left Coast, including this coming weekend. And if you are a follower of Steve's show, you already know that Karen is putting on a monster program. I call it War Room West because most of the best of the War Room cast of characters will be in attendance, as will I, not just attending, but speaking and presenting. And Karen, I couldn't be more pleased at what you've put together. They're always spectacular programs, and I want our audience to have a real flavor of what you're going to be doing with this particular program, who's going to be involved, a sense of it at least, and why it's important that they be there if they can.
Thank you so much, Frank. And as always, it's just a delight to be with you. You've been an inspiration to me and many others, and also just a tremendous leader in the fight for freedom. And whenever there's a major threat, we know that you'll be on it. And we also know that when you're on it, it's a major threat. So thanks to you. It is such an honor for me to be head of the American Freedom Alliance. And as such, to be able to address, as do you, but to a different extent, these major threats. And the conference that we have coming up, you can see behind me, World War III, the early years. And there's really no question at all that what we are in now is World War III. It's not a cold war. There are aspects of it, of course, that are cold, but it's hot in various parts of the world, and it is a much more pernicious war that, to a great extent, I don't want to say we've already lost, but we've already been in the process of losing. To whom? So where are these threats from World War III? Number one, of course, China. China's leading the way, or not China itself as a nation, but the Chinese Communist Party has been infiltrating, has been conducting, as we know, unrestricted warfare. And the bulk of what I know about this is from your Committee on the Present Danger, China, how they've been waging this for so long. Only every now and then does some piece of this peak above the surface, like the balloon, like Taiwan, like, you know, every now and then something occurs, but mostly it's happening invisibly to the American general public. Even while it's hiding in plain sight, just for example, TikTok, or that almost everything we buy is from them, including our medications. And another time, of course, it peaked above the surface was COVID itself. So they've been waging war on us, and we sort of just absorb it in some way.
Another example is, of course, this overseas police service center that's just been rolled up in New York City. I mean, just another example of their presence here and the subversive character of it. You're so right.
Exactly right. And very subversive. We know the Confucius Institutes to infiltrate schools and so on. It's really quite breathtaking when you realize the extent of it. And that's just in the U.S. Of course, Belt Road globally. It's breathtaking, the extent to which they own ports, theft of intellectual property, and let's not even get into organ harvesting and so on.
Yeah. Well, this compels me to just mention that one of the things that we've tried to do, as you say, with the Committee on the Present Danger, China's very considerable help is document that kind of unrestricted warfare and its enabling by Americans who have thrown in with the Chinese under elite capture or whatever other circumstances. And all of this is, of course, as you know, the subject of a book we've done to try to distill that information, this incredible 70 plus webinars of the past year into an accessible form. It's called The Indictment, Prosecuting the Chinese Communist Party and Friends for Crimes Against America, China, and the World. And we will be rolling it out, launching it before its actual publication date, as it happens, at the American Freedom Alliance Conference. And I just want to urge everyone who is within the sound of our voice, if you can, to go to AmericanFreedomAlliance.org, participate in the program. It's going to be just riveting. And Karen, you were talking, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, about the China piece of this. There are other dimensions of it, obviously.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about some of the people who will be participating in the program addressing this variety of topics.
So it is War Room West, as you say, but I would also say it's War Room meets Committee on the Present Danger China, with others thrown in. So you are kicking it off on Saturday, which is just the absolute, just I'm thrilled about. We have your Committee on the Present Danger, Colonel Mills, who's also on War Room. He'll be speaking about defeating the deep state. We have Dr. Bradley Thayer about understanding the China threat. We have Gordon Chang. We also have somebody who might not be as well known to your viewers, is Dr. Rima Labo, who does a lot of work on defending us against globalist attacks, in particular on our health freedom. So the World Health Organization ceding sovereignty to them, how the UN has been playing a role in all of that. We have Trevor Loudon, and then finishing on Saturday, we have the one and only Ed Dowd, who spoke at our last conference also. He's not going to talk so much about his work on vaccine and vaccine injury as about the global economic bubble that's bursting. So the economic aspect of World War III. Then we have the next day we open with Brigadier General Robert Spalding, which I'm absolutely thrilled about, who's written about unrestricted warfare. Steve Coughlin on the ideological linchpin behind it. And then your friend and mine, Robert Spencer, will be joining us. This is a new edition, World War III on the home front. Dr. Rechtenwald, China and the Great Reset. Dave Walsh, War Room. Energy is a geopolitical tool. Joe Allen, also War Room, about artificial intelligence as a weapon of mass destruction. And then, time permitting, we'll have a roundtable with a number of you on how you view all of this. And then the keynote, the pièce de résistance, is Steve Bannon himself, which we are over the moon about. But I would be remiss in not mentioning that our dinner speaker, Saturday night, there's a dinner with Douglas Murray, who comes at all this from a very different angle. I knew of him about the strange death of Europe, how they were allowing immigration to come in and destroy their own culture, their own everything. And then Madness of Crowds, there was a genius analysis on various of the pernicious means that the left has been using to undermine culture and our own individuality. And his latest book is War on the West. So pretty perfect. But we're asking him to speak less about the war, because we will have had the war all day long, but also in large part about why we are worth saving, which is a piece that doesn't always get talked about.
It gets talked about as though we're really not worth saving.
Exactly, so, right.
You know, this is so important. And what I love about this, Karen, is that you have a synthesis of extraordinarily impressive present company accepted, just extraordinarily impressive, not just intellects, but people who are in the fight, much as you are with the American Freedom Alliance.
Yes. And
I think that the excitement that I believe the audience will take away from this, that while we may be losing to this point, all is not lost.
Right.
And it behooves us to make sure that it isn't. And I know that there will be, in Steve Bannon's inimitable fashion, not least, a call for action, action, action. And I think what we'll be hopefully giving each of them, and I know we will in our part about the 20 action steps in the indictment, is a real program of action for trying to defeat our mortal enemy, the Chinese Communist Party, and obviously the others it's now arrayed against us as well. So again, how do people find out more about your program in general? The important conferences you've already had, as well as how they can be involved in this particular one.
AmericanFreedomAlliance.org is our website, and on the homepage there are links to seeing the entire program of this conference and purchasing tickets. And I would offer you two different coupon codes for discounts. One is War Room and one is CPDC. So you have your choice
Committee
on that.
Committee on the Present Danger China. Yep.
That is correct. CPDC for Committee on the Present Danger China. War Room is another for 25% off. Our many years ago conferences are all on our YouTube channel, American Freedom Alliance, but our recent ones, for obvious reasons, are now on Rumble.
Yes, terrific. Karen Sigeman, you are an angel as well as a freedom fighter of the first order. God bless you in this conference. I look forward to seeing you participating in it, and hope our audience will as well. We'll be right back with more right after this. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. You may have noticed that something has been terribly wrong with America's public health system. One reason is that it's been heeding World Health Organization bureaucrats doing the bidding of the Chinese Communist Party. They concealed the fact that the CCP deliberately unleashed a biological warfare attack against this country and the rest of the world. The WHO not only lied about the origins and nature of the Wuhan virus, it also insisted on the so-called China model response of masks, lockdowns, mandatory jabs with inadequately tested so-called vaccines, and digital passports to enforce them. Investigators of Pfizer documents found the company and regulators had evidence they were perpetrating a, quote, great crime against humanity, unquote. We need accountability and protection against the World Health Organization, the Chinese Communist, Big Pharma, and our own government doing even worse to us in the future. This is Frank Gaffney. We're back, and I'm always excited to be able to say we're joined by a man who has been, well, cutting quite a swath, I think it's fair to say, in various capacities, as a former special operator in the United States military, as a guy who knows his way around, well, counterintelligence activities, and not least, investigating the same. On the outside of government these days, his name is Brian O'Shea. He is a man I've come to know and admire greatly, not least because of his very, very successful choice of a wife. Her name is Naomi Wolf. She is known to this audience, I think, well, through the great work that she has been doing at Daily Clout. As it happened, I was privileged to be at a book launch party with her and not with Brian, who was detained elsewhere, unfortunately. But we were there for the unveiling of this book, Pfizer Documents Analysis Reports. And I wanted to get Brian on. We were trying to grab his wife, but it didn't work out for today, but we'll have her on in the future, hope soon. Because I know he's been intimately involved in helping her and a remarkable, I call it pickup team, of volunteers encouraged to participate in the Daily Clout's research into this trove of documents that Big Pharma's mainstay company, Pfizer, was compelled to make public by court order. The encouragement coming from our friend Steve Bannon and War Room. And the book's authors are the War Room posse and others pulled in with it by Daily Clout, Naomi's program. And the results of these reports, and this is just the first batch of them, by the way, there's many more to come, are simply stupefying. So we're anxious to pick Brian's brain a little bit as part of the team that pulled this all together. And as a guy who also knows his way around some scurrilous activity, that's for sure. Brian O'Shea, welcome back. It's good to have you with us. Just give us a little bit more of the flavor of what Naomi, the War Room posse, the Daily Clout team have done here and its significance as you see it.
And thank you for having me, Frank. It's good to see you again. What a project. I'll put it that way. Really quick history on it. As most people know, these documents had been embargoed, 55,000 of them. In a case that had to go to court because they didn't want to release him. Now I'm holding back.
For 75 years, as I understand.
75 years. And the most shocking part is the they that I'm talking about was not Pfizer. It was the FDA on behalf of Pfizer. That was the defendant in the case. And so
the Food and Drug Administration, this is just to tell folks of a lot of things that are now coming to light about the regulatory capture, I think it's fair to call it, by Big Pharma, Pfizer and others, of their regulators. Carry on.
Yeah, and on that note, we do know that the former director of FDA is now on the one of the senior members of the board at Pfizer. I'm sure it's just a coincidence. So anyways, these documents were released, and it was quite frustrating because there were people actually in the medical community in published works kind of mocking the American people and saying things like, and I don't have the quote in front of me, but in a nutshell, fine, they can have their transparency, actually put quotes around that. Let's see them get through all these 55,000 documents. And probably the wrong thing to say to Steve Bannon and Naomi Wolf, who
right.
had been collaborating on mainly on War Room on various subjects. And I talked to my wife and I said, well, you have a massive audience. Why don't you crowdsource it? And I'm not taking credit for the idea, but we
I think she gave you credit for the idea, actually.
Oh, did she?
Well, program last night, as I recall.
Trying to be humble.
Yeah, but, no. Credit where it's due. It was a brilliant idea. So they pulled in 3,500 or so of these volunteers and
yeah,
give us a sense of the caliber of these people. They weren't just folks off the street, right?
No, they were statisticians. They are statisticians, doctors. There's a whole legal team of lawyers. And there were a lot. There were people off the street that just wanted to be part of this and help. The biggest
But there were a lot of people with very considerable skills.
The majority
skills
of the people
as
have
well.
Everything yeah. you need for this. And really, yeah, the majority of the people. And, you know, like any large volunteer activity, people do drop off or you kind of encourage people to leave for various reasons. You know, there's always going to be a couple interlopers possibly sent by Pfizer. We sniffed out most of them pretty quickly. But the real challenge was getting it organized. And so at the time, I was the only person around to help get it organized because Naomi's manager at the time had a family matter that they just left for. And so I said, let's divide it up into some groups, you know, and I was kind of on the fly. And it took about 2 days for me to almost crash out of exhaustion and frustration. And then Naomi found the incredible Amy Kelly, who is now the current program manager, who jumped right in there and organized it. She's the nicest person who you never disobey a direct order from. I'll put it that way. And
well, you had some experience with those direct orders in your course of your military
yes,
career.
Yes, absolutely.
And suffice it to say, for the present moment, this is just the beginning of the dissection of unbelievable, I mentioned the scurrilous behavior on the part of this company, including, and we'll talk briefly about this on the other side of a short break, evidence of its knowing release of this so-called vaccine gene therapy, with plenty of evidence that there were serious problems associated with it. We'll talk about that and more with Brian O'Shea, among other things, husband of Naomi Wolf, right after this. Welcome back. We're speaking with a man who is these days a private investigator, but with a wonderful background in forensic activity with military and in other walks of life. His name is Brian O'Shea. We're talking with him about a project that he helped get organized and has some important insights into that resulted in this book, an extraordinary product, the first of several to come as a result of a, well, I call it pickup team, that the War Room Posse, our friend Steve Bannon's operation, and Naomi Wolf's Daily Cloud put together under the leadership of Amy Kelly. Brian, just a quick appreciation of, well, how you would characterize what has been established so far is the nature of Pfizer's misconduct, and that, as you said, of the Food and Drug Administration as well.
Well, the nature of the misconduct is just, in my opinion, out and out fraud and buying the system that should be keeping us safe. And I say buying the system because some statistics show that over half of the fees that come into that testing branch of the FDA are funded from big pharmaceuticals. And so the fact that anyone would intentionally hide these type of adverse events or side effects from the American people in cahoots with the very agency that's supposed to keep us safe is beyond criminal.
It's reason to exist, isn't it?
Exactly. And so that's the most shocking part. And not only did they try to hide it, but then through HHS's ultimate ownership of the Vaccine Confidence Program, it's almost like they knew it would be damaging because the Vaccine Confidence Program was in full swing before the vaccine came out. So they were already convincing and dividing the American public to just go with it. Just get your shot, putting a personal pronoun on it. It's your shot. Go get it. You're going to infect people. All of these things turn out to be false.
And working with the government to make it obligatory. You know, not just make it selling it to you, but you were going to have to take that jab.
And even targeting our children with it.
Yeah. Well, and this is what's so heart-wrenching is that cohort of people who are essentially unaffected by this disease are very badly affected by their vaccine. Let me ask you about specifically one point that Naomi made in this book launch party last night about the impact on not just our kids, but unborn children and even the reproductive possibilities of males and females being affected by this vaccine. What can you tell us about that quickly and its import?
Really quickly, what I've seen in a nutshell is basically it does affect male performance and the ability to produce sperm or even have a function, if you will. And it also attacks the placenta from what I've seen. And certainly don't quote me. I'm not an expert on this. I'm not on the team currently. I just helped launch it. But the you know, it does cross through the placenta. It does go to the baby and or the, you know, and it does affect, the, you know, there's been a lot of stillbirths, there's been a lot of deaths, or there's been a lot of creation of the inability to even have children for a lot of women who take this.
And according to this report, they knew that. Pfizer was aware of those kinds of problems, maybe not the full extent of it, very early on in this thing. And nonetheless, as I guess the FDA was as well, they pressed on. This brings me to a question that I'm always interested in visiting with you about. You, among other things, study closely our mortal enemy, the Chinese Communist Party. And your wife has said that not only is this one of, if not history's greatest crime against humanity, but that it is a product of collaboration between, you know, our government and Big Pharma and that very enemy, including its biological warfare program. Mm-hmm. Brian, as a specialist on unrestricted warfare by the Chinese communists, what's the likelihood? I said it's no coincidence. What's the likelihood that the Chinese have either deliberately done this to us or certainly at least capitalized on what has been done in part by the virus coming out of their laboratory in Wuhan.
It's extremely likely. I've said it many times. We, in my opinion, are at war right now. If you change the way you look at war, if you're not looking for planes and troops on the ground, you're looking at unrestricted warfare in all of its forms. We are at war, and we've been at war for some time. So they did do this deliberately. And I do believe the entire goal was not only to get people to take the vaccine, but lately I've been thinking the whole goal of the release of this virus on the population of many countries was to prepare for Taiwan. And all the timelines lead to that, but I'll get back to that. What I do see with this vaccine that indicates that just recently we offered China some of our vaccines a few months ago because they had an outbreak, and they turned it down. Now, that's really pretty crazy because they're the ones making the vaccine right now through Fosun Pharmaceuticals. All of Pfizer's vaccines for COVID-19 are being made pretty much in China now, yet they turned it down for their own population. It's a pretty big indicator to me that they know something's wrong with it.
This is what's called a tell, I think, as
That's
well,
a tell.
Isn't it? Yeah. And Brian, if they're impacting not only reproduction, but they're impacting our young people, particularly, if not with the disease itself, with the vaccine that they're producing, and not least an outfit that you know well, the United States military. I'm told that now something on the order of 1 out of 9 people in the military who have been jabbed are either dead or have been permanently harmed or have been temporarily very severely injured. And it's hard to imagine a much more effective means of taking out your enemy's military capabilities than doing what is worse than decimation. I'm going to have you back to talk more about all of this, Brian, as soon as we can arrange it, because you're a great font of knowledge and you got a pretty darn bright wife too. We'll talk with both of you hopefully in the days to come, but thank you for your time today and thank you for all that you do for our country now out of uniform.
Thank you.
God bless you. Thanks to all of you for joining us. Come back for more next time. Until then, go forth and multiply.